Hi, everyone. This is the How to Lower Your Tax Bill podcast. I'm your host, Terrence Hutchins. I'm a financial and tax advisor in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And the goal of this podcast is to help you listeners get educated on different tax strategies that you can implement to improve your tax situation immediately. Each episode, we'll break down useful tax tips you can use to save money, no matter what your personal or business income situation. Because our motto is, keep more of what you earn. So let's get into today's episode. How's it going, everyone? Welcome back to the How to Lower Your Tax Bill podcast. This week, we are diving into a topic for business owners. And we're going to focus on two different strategies to implement related to business owners, and then we'll have two more on our next episode. Last week, we talked about mostly small businesses as it relates to how they treat auto deductions, their home office, meals, and travel. So go check that out if you have questions or thoughts on those areas. This week, we're going to look at two important topics. One is called the Qualified Business Income Deduction, or QBI for short. And then you also have the Pass-Through Entity Tax, PTET for short. If you keep up, we'll use those two acronyms just to make it less wordy. So you have QBI, Qualified Business Income Deduction, and then you have the PTET, or Pass-Through Entity Tax. The Pass-Through Entity Tax came into existence after the Jobs and Tax Cut Act of 2017. So starting the tax year 2018, they go through the end of 2025. And so what these two provisions basically spell out is on the QBI deduction, this is centered around pass-through entities. So if you own a sole proprietorship, a partnership, or an S-corporation, that business doesn't actually pay taxes, except in very limited situations. But that entity doesn't pay taxes. You as the owner of that entity pays the taxes. So whatever profits the business has passes through to you on your individual 1040 tax return. And so in 2017, one of the objectives of that Jobs and Tax Cut Act was to provide a tax deduction for big corporations. At the time, the top tax rate for those corporations was 35%. That is now 21%. And so the thought was, well, if you're going to give Apple Corporation a tax break, how are you not going to give a tax break to the little guy, to the small business owner? And so that's where the QBI deduction comes into play. And so the QBI deduction essentially says, if you have qualified business income, which is generally the active operational income that you make in the business, it doesn't really factor in items that they would call separately stated. So interest, capital gains, dividends, those aren't going to be included in your actual QBI calculation. It's really going to be the actual operating profit of the business. So based on the type of business that you own and how much profit and income you have, you can get up to a 20% tax deduction on that qualified business income. For easy math, if you have $100,000 profit in your S corporation, you're going to have a K-1 that's going to show you made $100,000 in profit. But when you file your tax return, you're only going to pay tax on $80,000 of that profit. So 20% or $20,000 in this case, you're not going to have to pay taxes on. So that's actually a very powerful deduction that has allowed small business owners to actually reduce their tax bill quite a bit, specifically if you have a nice size profit. Okay. Now there's two main things to keep in mind with this deduction. One of them is going to be related to, are you considered an SSTB, which is short for a specified service, trade, or business? Or are you a non-SSTB business? Well, of course, the IRS has to complicate everything. And so what they call a non-SSTB or a specified service, trade, or business, they're looking at how do you actually make your money in the business? They are going to isolate out what they consider businesses that make their money based on the skill or expertise of the owner. They've identified 13 main types of businesses. So I'm going to give you this list. So if this applies to you, then you potentially could have your QBI deduction lowered from that 20%. So they're going to look at accounting, actuarial science, athletics, consulting, financial services, health, brokerage services, investing, law, performing arts, trading and dealing in securities. Or they just give a blanket view and say, if the income you make is based on a service that you provide that is based on the reputation or skill of the owner, then you are going to now be subject to a phase out, which means that if you make quote unquote too much money, you may not be eligible for this deduction at all. All right. Now, there's a few people that I would consider in the service industry that aren't applicable to this. So if you're an architect or an engineer, maybe you're an independent, or you're a real estate agent or an insurance agent, you're actually considered a non-specified service trade or business. So if you're a non-specified trade or business, then you still might have some level of phase out, but you're going to have a lot more flexibility. All right. So I know I mentioned this word phase out. So generally, when it comes to most tax matters, the IRS sort of discriminates against people when they make a certain amount of money. If you make over a certain amount of money, and in this case, if you're in higher than the 24% tax bracket, so if your income for 2024, if you're single, if it exceeds $241,950, or if you're married and your income exceeds $483,900, you no longer qualify for this deduction if you are a specified service, trade, or business. So if you make $500,000 as a married person for your adjusted gross income, you no longer qualify for this deduction. All right. Now, if you make that amount of money, but you're considered a non-specified service, trade, or business, you can still qualify for this deduction, but it just might be lowered. And so just to make things a little interesting, the IRS introduced this idea that they said, hey, we don't want to punish people who have a lot of employees, or we don't want to punish people who are investing in property. All right. And so they've essentially added this extra component to this QBI deduction that says if your income is above that threshold, so the 483 if you're married or 241 if you're single, if your income is above that threshold, then we still will allow you to get this QBI deduction, but you're going to have to go through a second test. So if you're paying attention at home, this is where you have to turn it from 1.8 speed down to maybe 1 speed. But that second test, I'm going to break it down. So you have 20% of your qualified business income. All right. Now, if your income is above that threshold that I just gave you, they're going to say, okay, you are going to either be limited to 20% of your income, or they're going to now look at what are half of your wages. And you're going to look at half of your wages and you're going to compare half of your wages against 25% of your wages plus 2.5% of your property. Okay, so let me just give you kind of a simple example just with easy straight numbers. So let's just say going back to my original example, let's say your qualified business income was $100,000. Your QBI deduction would traditionally be 20% or $20,000. However, if your adjusted gross income is, let's say, above the threshold because you have income from other sources or your spouse is a high earner, let's say. Now, they're going to look and say, okay, what wages does the business pay to all of its staff? All right. So let's just say your business pays $200,000 of wages to all of their staff people. Half of that is $100,000. So now we got $20,000, which is the original 20% of your qualified business income. Then we have half of your wages, which is $100,000. But I also have to compare half of that to 25% of my wages plus 2.5% of any property that I have. All right. So I'm just going to keep this simple. We have $100,000 of profit. My normal QBI deduction would be $20,000. However, if I'm above the threshold, my income as a married person is above 483, and I'm a specified service trade or business, I lose out on that $20,000 deduction. But if I'm a non-specified service trade or business, and I have salaries that I pay to my staff, I can now look at those numbers and say, okay, half of my salaries of $200,000 is $100,000. All right. And then I have to compare that to 25% of my wages, which 25% of $200,000 is now $50,000, plus 2.5% of any property that I own. So let's just say I don't own any property, just to make it simple. So now I say, okay, I have $100,000, which is half my wages versus $25,000. You're going to take the higher of those two numbers. The higher number is $100,000. Okay. But now we're going to compare that to the $20,000, which is the original QBI deduction. So in that case, your QBI deduction is going to be the lesser of the $20,000 or the 100,000, which now is going to be 20,000. Okay. Now let's just imagine for a second though, your actual profit wasn't 100,000. Let's just say it was 600,000. 20% of that is now 120,000, which is higher than the 100,000. So at this point, your deduction would be the 100,000 versus the 120. So you're going to go to the lesser of those two numbers and you're going to compare to the greater of the other equation. So obviously in these situations, you're going to have to probably write this out or certainly work with someone who's qualified so they can make sure that you are applying these numbers correctly and you're maximizing the deduction. And it's also important to understand what kind of business are you operating, or if you're looking to start a business, is this a QBI business? Is this a STB business or is it a non-SSTB business? Okay. Now, if you have a non-SST business, you might have operations that are service-based. But if your revenue is below $25 million, you just can't have more than 10% of it be from a specified service trader business. So for example, if you run a store and your store also does consulting, your consulting income has to be less than 10% of the total revenue for you to be considered a non-specified trader business as an aggregate. If it's more than 10%, then you're going to have to be subject to the specified service trader business rules. All right. So obviously it's a little bit confusing, but one other area that is important from a tax strategy standpoint is to look at what they call aggregation. All right. So if I have my hand in multiple businesses and my income is above the threshold, I now can potentially aggregate these businesses together to increase my deduction overall. As long as the businesses that I'm involved in all have more than 50% common ownership. So let's say I own two different businesses. They're both non-specified trades or business in two different industries. Okay. But they have common ownership. Me, I own more than 50% of both of them. And we share some kind of facility, personnel, or accounting system. So let's just say we have the same payroll provider, or we have the same, you know, distributor, or whatever the case is. If we have similar what they call facilities, personnel, or accounting systems, or we're dependent on each other for services or products, then I could actually aggregate my numbers together. So in that context, if my income is above the threshold and I have wages in both businesses, I can add those wages together. When I add those wages together, it may increase my overall calculation and that might possibly increase my total deduction. So if you have multiple businesses, you're going to want to look at this aggregation to see if it's advantageous for you to do it or it's not advantageous for you to do it. Now, one other point to think about is when you're planning your taxes for the next year, it's important to factor in if you're going to qualify for this deduction or not. So if you want to look at your tax return from last year, you're going to look at line 13. That's going to tell you what your QBI deduction was. And if you want to get nerdy and look at the calculation, that's going to be on form 8995. Now, if you were above the threshold, it's going to be on the form 8995A. That's going to add in that second test. But that's just a simple way to evaluate based on your income. If you are, you know, how much of that deduction did you receive? Now, one point for you freelancers, or if you have an opportunity to get 1099 income, that is one factor that you can look at as far as, or is it better off for you to get paid as a W-2 employee or as a 1099 contractor? Because depending on the benefits that are paid to you, that QBI deduction is going to give you a 20% tax deduction on your profits. That could mean, hey, for the same business, you're getting taxed at $10, $15, $20, $30, $40,000 less because you're in a QBI business versus as an employee. All right. So if you do have an opportunity to be a 1099, that is a calculation you'd at least want to factor in to determine, are you going to be better off financially doing the W-2 work versus the 1099. Okay. So that is the basics on the QBI deduction. And so lastly, we're going to wrap up with the PTET tax. All right. And so this tax came at the same time in 2018. And this was a workaround for the SALT deduction, which is basically the state and local income taxes. If you were used to itemizing your deductions on your tax return, meaning you were adding up your property taxes, your mortgage interest, your charitable deductions. Prior to 2018, there wasn't a set cap on the amount of property taxes or state taxes that you got to deduct. So if you paid $30,000 of state taxes on your state return where you had $30,000 of property taxes, you can get a $30,000 tax deduction on your federal return. Now, there's a thing called AMT I won't get into, but generally, you're going to be able to deduct all the taxes you pay either to your state and state income taxes or for your property taxes, all right? However, the Jobs and Tax Cut Act limited this deduction to $10,000 per taxpayer. And if you file separately, it's going to be $5,000 per taxpayer. So if you're single, it's $10,000. If you're married, it's $10,000, all right? This was sort of a workaround because for people who are business owners, pass-through entities, so if you own a partnership or an S corporation, and you're in a state that has income taxes, these states wanted to be able to not have been so isolated or been kind of singled out. Because when it comes to population growth, many states look at what are the tax advantages of living in my state. So if I have a high property tax and a high state tax, and there's no way to get a tax break for that, these states were going to be at a disadvantage. So they lobbied to now introduce this PDET election. There's about 40 states that have enacted laws for this. The highlight is generally, if you will allow your business entity to pay the taxes that you would normally owe from your business profit to the state on your behalf through the business, you can get a tax deduction at the federal level. All right. So let me just put that in layman's terms. So let's just say that you live in the state of Georgia and you're a decently high income earner, and Georgia is going to charge you $30,000 of state taxes when you file your state tax return. All right. You can make an election that says, hey, look, I am going to actually pay these state taxes through the business. Okay. So this works really well if you're a solo owner because there's no one else to consider. So you say, hey, look, that $30,000, I'm going to have to pay it. But if I pay it, I want to pay it from my business, and my business is paying that on my behalf. And if they pay it on my behalf, they actually can get a tax deduction for that $30,000. So instead of me losing out on a $20,000, which is $30,000 minus 10, or if I don't even itemize that deductions, I lose out on the full $30,000 deduction. If I pay it through my business and I make this election, I can deduct the tax that I would have owed to the state as a business expense and actually get a federal tax deduction for it. So that's that workaround. All the states kind of have different ways that they do this. Some of them provide a tax credit on your state return. So whenever you file the state return, it's going to show, hey, you have a credit for the money that you owe the state. You have a credit because it was paid through your business. Like the state of Louisiana, for example, they say if you have salary, you're still going to pay us state taxes on that, but we're going to exclude any money you got from the business profit. So we're not going to include that in the calculation of your income. So they actually can exclude it from your income. So let's just say your business profit was $100,000. They'll say, okay, you're going to pay state taxes on your wages, but you're not going to pay state taxes on your business profit if you make this election. Okay. So this is an important election that I see missed for people that are in states that have income taxes. And it, hopefully your state, most of the states have it. There's a few states out there like Pennsylvania that do have a state tax, but they have not had a way to file it. But if your state has this election, it's important to review this with your tax advisor to make sure you're taking advantage of it, especially if you own a business, a partnership, or an S corporation. Or if you have partners or you have shareholders in your S corp, having a conversation with all of them to see if it makes sense for you as the business to make this election. And then how does that equal out to each individual owner? So hopefully this was helpful as far as the QBI deduction and the PTET. And so next time we're going to be talking about depreciation to give you guys a quick rundown on that. And then some general business tax credits that you may or may not qualify for as a business owner. So this week we have an interesting tax fact. We will normally go over some kind of strange tax case or weird tax fact. This week in 1696, England actually taxed windows. If you're a homeowner, you had to pay tax based on how many windows your house had. All right. So obviously, when you're getting taxed on something, people will adjust their behavior. In this case, they would actually brick up their houses instead of having windows. So they would have to pay tax on it. So this tax lasted nearly 200 years. In 1851, they repealed the tax. But for 160 plus years, you were actually paying taxes if you had windows. So I'm the type of person, I probably would have had bricks just like the other people. Well, that's it for today's episode. Thanks for joining in. And remember, if you're thinking about taxes, keep more of what you earn.